if people don't see themselves in a process, in a business, in a media representation, they tend to feel alienated. They tend to not engage it. So at the same time we talk about things like racial and gender representation and LGBTQ representation in the media, the same holds true for who owns and who creates something. So when beer swung to being more of a male space in the media and in the breweries, it also became more of a male space as a social ritual. When you put women back into the process of creating beer and owning places that create beer, you're more likely to get women in the market as well.
That is Dr. Annie Sugar. She has a PhD in media studies and currently teaches in the Media and Communications Studies Department at Johnson & Wales Denver campus. Dr. Sugar says that while beer itself has no gender, the media has created a false construct whereby advertising was directed primarily at men. She originally became interested in the topic of gender and beer while listening to a PRI The World story in fall 2011 about a Molson Coors study that said 12 to 37% of women surveyed don't drink their product. Dr. Sugar was then inspired to write her first paper looking at the marketing of beer. Specifically, it considered Super Bowl ads from the mid-80s to the early 2000s and the attempt to manipulate male identity and masculinity through beer advertising. Further, she has conducted ethnographic research with ladies brewing enthusiast groups in Denver, including the Crafty Ladies Beer Club and Ales for Females at Left Hand Brewing. Dr. Sugar says it is important that people see themselves in a process, business, or media representation, otherwise they feel alienated. With the increasing interest in brewing, all types of people are finding their way back to craft beer. We discuss women's historical position in brewing, as well as the past and present roles of media in beer consumption. Dr. Sugar, thanks for being with us. Let's start out by talking about this history of women in brewing. What's important about looking at women in brewing?
In brewing itself, there's been a big push to get women back actually into the back of the house in breweries again for a couple of reasons. First, women were the original brewers. So we've been brewing and drinking beer for as long as 9,000. We're actually starting to find artifacts dating back almost to 10,000 years. So beer and civilization go hand in hand. Early brewing and well into the medieval age, and then we see resurgence of it in the early colonies, the American colonies, women were the original brewers. Brewing was women's work. It was kind of an extension of agriculture. We owe the beer we drink that includes hops to nuns, and only when beer, along with distilling and also making of wine, could be profitable was it taken over by men and became more of this patriarchal industrial process rather than small batch brewing. It is worthy of note that there are parts of the world where women are still the main and sometimes only brewers, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, but also in the Caribbean as well, where it's still considered women's work. So it does harken back to an original history where women were moved out of the process during the industrial age.
At what point was the brewing space really taken over by men, both culturally and in the media?
As far as the brewing space goes, men in the United States took that over pretty quickly after the establishment of a nation versus a collection of colonies. Whenever anything new is created, say you're going to carve a new country out of a frontier, that's when you see pretty equitable gender roles. It doesn't matter who's doing it as long as stuff gets done. And at that point, you're not too worried about what is proper for a man or a woman to be doing. And at that point in time, that's when we saw a lot of home brewing and a lot of home distilleries and small businesses that were run by women. Once we enter the Victorian age and there are issues of, you know, what is proper for women to be engaging in as far as both drinkers and business and women owning business at all, we see men start to take that over more. But a real turning point, there are two real turning points. The first is the mid-19th century when we see a shift into the industrial age worldwide, but particularly in England and in the United States. And that's when you see beer start to become more of an industrial undertaking. and with that being male-owned. Here in the United States, we also saw a large influx of Germans. And with the German population came their beer, and a lot of that was brewed by men. That was a culture that had long since made the shift from women brewing to men brewing, which started in the late medieval and Renaissance era, where we see brewing taken out of the hands of nuns and abbeys and put more into it being more of a commercial undertaking. And once something can be monetized and profitable, that's when you usually see men at the helm in a patriarchal society. And then we see prohibition happen in the United States in the 1920s into the early 30s. And when beer made its recovery and rebranded itself after prohibition, two things happen. One is you see women almost completely removed from brewing. You also see a very quick decrease in the number of brewers active in the United States. A lot of the smaller family-owned companies just didn't make it. And this happens at a time when women are, well, during the 1930s, when there's not work for anybody. So the women weren't going to work in breweries. And then during World War II, if women worked, they were working on the home front as part of the war effort. And then after that, we just see a push for women to return to the home. And when I say women, I want to be clear that I'm talking about white women. Women of color worked outside of the home continuously. But all too often we talk just in terms of a blanket term of women when we should be saying, making clear that we're talking about white women in brewing. And but we see beer marketed post-prohibition into the middle of the 20th century, often to women and by women as the beverage of the good middle class white American hostess. It's sort of the American champagne. It's what well-heeled couples serve at their picnics. You see a lot of ads around, picking up a six-pack for your cookout, but the cookout is more of a genteel affair rather than what we see marketed a lot of times these days around, a cookout tailgating with a game. It's also depicted as what you would drink on date nights at a jazz club or on your ski vacation, something along those lines, a little like what we see in Corona ads these days. And women were not only the market, but they were the spokesperson. You often see in print and television ads of the 1950s and 60s, women actually consuming the beer or holding a beer. And then in the 70s, we start to see a shift toward beer for everybody. But then in the late 70s, particularly the early 80s, with what we call the neoliberal turn in the media, that was also mirrored the neoliberal turn in our economy during the Reagan administration, we see a complete turnabout in like 1983, where beer is strictly marketed to men. And we see women disappear from the marketing completely. And then in the mid and late 80s, make a reappearance as one of two kinds of women, either the bitch, who's the wife or the girlfriend who gets in the way of the good times that men are trying to have with each other and or their beer alone. And the beer babe, the hottie who somehow facilitates the good times. They facilitate the idea of there being some kind of sexual activity or sexual gratification around the partying with beer. So they are eye candy. They're often in a bikini. They are often serving the beer as a bartender or a girl in a bikini who brings it. So they get tied into this good time kind of virtual moving man cave that beer provides anywhere to any man at any point, as long as he's got a six pack. And it often depicts men without six packs enjoying the six pack. So a complete shift in what masculinity looks like as well. And this takes place at a particular time because during the 1970s, we saw the collapse of manufacturing and agriculture sectors here in the United States, and a lot of men were left out of work. And there was a lot of social and cultural shift between shift in what kind of jobs were available in the United States, but also the fact that women had entered the workplace and were also running things at home. They were often head of household with a rising divorce rate. So what had been traditionally masculine roles, both in the workplace and at home, changed very, very quickly from the late 70s into the early 80s. And advertisers saw an opportunity to provide kind of a salve of sorts, that to offer a place of escape to what they deemed the blue-collar white male, and then later men of color, within kind of this false bubble of beer. And this is where we see women removed from drinking and engaging beer on a social level, as well as having been removed from brewing.
And then coming back to today and this resurgence of women in brewing culture, where do you feel that this comes from and what is it bringing to the industry?
Well, I want to be clear that women never really left brewing. I mean, I never left drinking beer, even though they may not have been visible in the media, although we start to see women coming back to the fringes of drinking in the media on shows like Cheers and Roseanne, and to a smaller degree, Married with Children. But women were always beer drinkers, in different places and to different degrees. It was always kind of part of blue-collar culture, where it was always deemed acceptable. But I think you probably could have found a woman who would drink a beer anywhere in American society. Part of the resurgence of women in brewing is tied to the resurgence of everybody in brewing and the growth and accessibility of the hobby of home brewing. So in the 90s, when people started brewing their own beer, it wasn't just men doing it. Women were interested in it as well. A lot of the women I know through the women beer enthusiast groups here on the Front Range actually have careers in STEM or degrees in STEM fields. So they're very interested in ideas, hobbies that involve chemistry. And or beer is kind of, it's a food and it's an extension of cooking. So a lot of folks who love to garden and love to cook also want to try their hand at making beer as well. And with the rise of the maker culture over the last 15, 20 years, the very do-it-yourself culture, beer has been wrapped up in that too. And so, you know, if you're going to wallpaper your bathroom, why not brew your own beer? And there's been no gender around that. A lot of women I know who got into home brewing did it learning from other friends, including female friends. They got a new job and discovered that they had a new coworker who brewed, and they went and hung out on the weekend and they brewed a beer together. And then they were hooked. Or something for couples to do together. A lot of people I know as young couples or young marrieds wanted an activity to share and tried home brewing or decided to go try a new brewery. And through that, there was a gender equitable entry into brewing beer and to trying beer as a couple. A lot of the women I talk to who get into it didn't necessarily see it as any kind of a gender justice or feminist act. They just liked beer or wanted to explore something new. They were interested in finding a new business or finding a new activity, and beer just stuck for them. And it's not as though there was a padlock on the gate that said, you know, no girls allowed, but they just weren't being represented in the media. And so the belief was that women weren't there in the market when they actually were, and that they weren't eager to brew beer when they were actually ready to go.
Going back to something that you said earlier about how diversity, not just in gender, but in all ways, is really important in brewing, I'm curious specifically about women, and then to expand it to different types of diversity. Mm-hmm. What do you think it's bringing to the culture and to the product as well to have more of a diverse participation?
I'm actually going to answer the second half of that question first, if you're okay with that. So the craft beer movement has its roots in the late 80s, early 90s. So it's older and longer than we think it is. And there were a few small craft breweries through the 90s. It started to pick up some momentum in the late 90s and then really exploded in the past 10 years, particularly in the last 5 years, where we're seeing it everywhere. But one of the early proponents of it and early people to have success with craft breweries is Garrett Oliver at Brooklyn Brewery. And he's Black. And so it was a Black brewer who helped bring innovation to beer in the United States. And he has been such a champion and such an amazing proponent of beer education. He's one of the authors and editors of the Oxford Beer Dictionary or Beer Bible. I can't remember which it is. We'll have to look that up. That cataloged everything there is to know about beer, that helped to make beer accessible to people. And, you know, even decades on, last year at the Great American Beer Festival here in Denver, on Saturday night, which is the night that's after the awards are given out, when most brewers have done their partying and they go on to other parts of the city. A lot of the kegs have been tapped, and that last session often tends to be more of a party session than an aficionado session sometimes. And it's great fun, but at the same time, that tends to be more of the populist group than anything else. There was Garrett Oliver on Saturday night, you know, dressed to the nines, standing at the table at his booth, personally pouring beer after beer after beer and talking to people who came up and stood in line to try what they were pouring there at Brooklyn. And I think a lot of people who took a beer from him had no idea who he was, that he was the brewer, that he was one of the original brewers of craft beer, and that he has been such an advocate for changing beer and making beer more accessible here in the U.S., and it just shows that level of passion and care. And I think that having diverse voices, and by that diversity, that includes women, that includes people of color. And one of the fastest growing markets, but also one of the fastest growing groups of brewers in the United States are Latinos and Latinas. What they are doing is very innovative and very exciting, putting a lot of indigenous Latin flavors into beers. And there's a lot of brewing happening south of the border into Mexico and down into South America that I think will see it influence what we do here in the U.S. as far as beer and craft more and more in the next decade.
You were telling me before we went on air that you drink at Fiction Brewing in Denver, not only because it's close to your house, but also because of the atmosphere in there. So what's important about the tap room, and how do you feel like it's contributing to the culture of craft beer drinking?
Yes, in my research, so my dissertation research involved an ethnography with these groups, which means you kind of go native. You go in and search yourself as part of the group. A good ethnographer lets the group they're observing and participating with know what you're up to. But I will admit, probably 6 months to a year in, the switch flipped for me where I realized I wasn't there for research anymore, that this was, I had completely gone native. I was a craft beer drinker, and that those women were my tribe. And they are my sisters and my family here now. And the second half of that research involved in-depth interviews with many of them. And the theme about, you know, brewery culture versus bar culture came up repeatedly. And breweries have become kind of that third space for a lot of people who love beer, the same way a coffee house was. So it's somewhere between a bar and a coffee house or a bookstore, where it's a safe place to go and enjoy and explore something, work on what you want to do. It can be a cheers type thing where you see your neighbors and people you know, and you can just kind of engage on a low maintenance level. It's a place you can go for a date, or you can go for happy hour with friends, or you can just go and be left alone. And women repeatedly said that they felt like breweries and tap rooms were safe spaces for them to engage as drinkers, to engage as people who were just trying to get some work done or read a book or just relax and be left alone, where they could have conversations with people that were friendly without necessarily feeling sexually threatened or just interrupted and disturbed for the most part.
And then speak a little bit as well about the economic impact that women and other groups are having on the craft brewing industry.
So what my research found was that craft beer has been so successful and has had such both a cultural and economic impact nationwide, but especially here on Colorado's Front Range, because it's innovative. And it's largely innovative because it's a millennial movement. While a lot of the original brewers and many people still in craft, particularly in the larger and more influential breweries, are baby boomers and are Gen Xers, it really is a movement with a millennial ethos around it. The idea of doing something innovative, doing what you love for the sake of loving it. So many brewers have a full-time job still because the brewery doesn't support them, but they want to do something that they're passionate about. They want to create. They want to create something unique and all their own. The idea that you did it with your hands. You built the tap room with your hands. You brewed the beer with your hands. You were there actually serving it to the people who were drinking it. And the drinkers at the same time love to have that personal connection with each other, with the product, with the producer. And craft beer offers that. And people are willing to pay a premium for that. They'd rather drink, one or two beers that they're paying $6 to $10 for because it's a good and complex experience. And it's something that comes with a personal relationship with a brewer. You can walk in the door and find and meet the person who actually made the beer you're drinking, rather than spending $10 on a 24-pack that was brewed someplace else at a push-button corporate operation by somebody who was removed from the product when they made it, and you don't have a say, and you have that distance, that isolation, and that lack of control. That's a millennial experience. I think millennials get a bad rap as being distant or living at home, which we know isn't true, and poor, which, yes, some are, but you can find that in any generation. But it's a generational identity that is not as socially removed as we want to believe. We see images in the media of millennials on their phones and think they're disconnected, when what they're actually doing is connecting with each other through beer apps like Untappd. So they may be sitting at a bar by themselves, but they're often engaging with their beer on Instagram or another app and with other beer drinkers, and expanding that relationship from something very hyper-local, which is the brewery and the brewer in their neighborhood, to everybody across the globe via social media. It's that connectedness. And that's something that doesn't require a marketing budget. So a lot of that money goes directly back into the brewery and back into beer culture, and often stays local, which people like. And at the same time, it also self-markets.
Let's talk just really briefly about, because we've talked about media in terms of television advertisements, but I think you raise a really interesting point with your mention of apps and of Instagram. Tell me a little bit about this phenomenon of social media and smartphones in how beer is now being advertised and consumed and shared with friends and connected.
Beer lends itself to social media because beer is beautiful. And for the same reason people take pictures of their food, people take pictures of their beer. And there's a whole, there's an art to it. And I have two friends that have two very different approaches. One is just an artist with the light. She always gets the color and the light just right. Whereas another one does a great job of positioning her pictures of beer within the larger brewery experience. So you get an idea of a sense of place. And it's funny. It's kind of a flip on what the neoliberal corporate advertising machine tried to do with this idea of you have this man cave, this movable man cave where you can be with your buddies and kind of live this endlessly juvenile Peter Pan life through beer wherever you are, as long as beer is with you. And through social media, that has been reclaimed by individual drinkers of all stripes. And there's an egalitarian nature to social media.
I was going to say
and women use social media very, very heavily.
Do you have anything else before we close?
I think that it's important to note that a lot of these beer enthusiast groups exist because the brewing culture, the craft brewing culture, and the brewers in it, and the restaurants engaged in promoting craft beer as their specialty, recognized that women were a neglected market and an important market, and created these groups like Crafty Ladies in order to kind of bring them in from the outside and develop that market, which is smart. And that has been done in lieu of what you'd consider traditional advertising. And we're seeing craft beer becoming a gender equitable space, but also a space that has a very, very feminist culture to it, partly because women are engaged, but partly because it welcomes everybody. And that's the idea behind feminism. It's both men and women and people of all genders and craft beer are pushing a feminist economic revolution.
Annie, thank you very much. It's been really interesting to speak with you.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Annie Sugar. She is currently teaching at the Johnson & Wales Denver campus, and we were speaking about women, brewing, and the media.